Welcome to the Women in STEM podcast, your go-to destination for exhilarating journeys through the triumphs and challenges of extraordinary women, shaping the world in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. I am your host, Kelly, and together we will explore the stories of visionary tech CEOs, groundbreaking scientists, and insightful recruiters, and many more women, making this podcast a dynamic showcase of global talent. Join me as we unravel the stories behind their success, offering a first-hand account of their experiences and invaluable advice at every stage of their remarkable career. Get ready for a thrilling exploration of innovation, resilience, and empowerment as we amplify the voices of trailblazing individuals, breaking barriers and building a future where brilliance knows no boundaries. This is the Women in STEM podcast, where inspiration and knowledge collide to propel us forward towards limitless possibilities. Welcome to the Women in STEM podcast. Would you like to introduce yourself, please, Natalie?
Oh, I'd be happy to. My name is Dr. Natalie Colville. I am a scientist and an educator, and I have been able to bridge those two parts of my work that I love into a nonprofit organization that I started called BioBuilder. We started in 2011, spinning out from MIT in the Department of Biological Engineering, where I was teaching. And our goals are to help students find their path into life science, college, and careers, as well as to help industry know that they will have the talent they will need to thrive.
Wow, that sounds really impressive. I'm very curious to find out a bit more about BioBuilder and kind of understanding what are the core principles behind BioBuilder and the approach to STEM education, and particularly on focusing on learning. Would you be able to expand on that, please?
Oh, happy to. There are lots of ways, I think, that we can bring science education into this century. But the way we try to do it at BioBuilder is to connect the way we teach science and the way we do science. To me, it seems odd that we ask students to memorize a big fat book of science facts and somehow tell them that that will make them a good scientist. I, as a young person, was really surprised that science is such a collaborative and problem-solving puzzle, really. And I don't know why we hide those very best parts of science when we teach science. So our goal really is to pull back the curtain on those really good parts of science. And I think in that way, we will attract students into science, give them a first chance to think of themselves as scientists. And if we're really successful, I hope that we can help transform high school education into something that's really meaningful and engaging for students, and then also train the students for the jobs that they want and that our society needs.
And with regards to training the jobs for helping children with regards to STEM, is it both focusing on girls and boys, or do you specifically try to focus on girls? I was just wondering.
Yeah, I think we need all. I think there's so much talent in this next generation that we shouldn't be encouraging everybody. And in that way, we really will build a stronger pipeline that is appreciative of everyone's talents.
And with regards to building a stronger pipeline, what would you say are some of the obstacles that you would have to overcome? For example, how does BioBuilder make STEM education more accessible, especially for students in underserved and rural communities?
I think it's a super important question. The phrase that I really like that I think about a lot is that if you want to go fast, you should go alone, but if you want to go far, you should go together. And I think some of BioBuilder's success can really be attributed to the fact that we partner with educational spaces, so teachers, students, regions, district leaders who want to revitalize the education, the science education in their community. And then we also partner with regions that want to revitalize their economy using life science.
And I know that you have some really like exciting events coming up. So the Pi Day event at MIT. Can you share how it went and the significance of Pi Day in this context?
Sure. Yeah. And maybe before I get into the specifics of that really wonderful event that I'm excited to tell you about, I can put it in a little bit of context. We just stepped back and looked at our impact numbers, and over the last dozen years, we've estimated now that we have contacted, and worked with something like 63,000 students and teachers and industry professionals, and they are in almost every state. We're in 49 states. We're missing North Dakota. Hope to get there. We're in dozens of countries, and we've really influenced students as well as their teachers in all of those places. And so when we run events for our programs, like the Pi Day event, it is really to celebrate the student success and the student achievement, because they have done tremendous things. So Pi Day is our celebration of one of our programs called the BioBuilder Club, which is an after-school club that runs. This time there were students representing 11 states and four countries. We had more than 250 people gather either on Zoom or in the room at MIT on the day, Pi Day, which celebrates science. We could celebrate student achievement in science. And they shared their ideas in what was probably their first real scientific symposium. They gave lightning talks to their colleagues and other teachers and scientists who were in the room. They presented posters to one another. We had a Discord channel where they could interact with one another when the students were not in the room, and they could ask questions of each other. So it was a terrific day. But as I say, one of our many events that we use to celebrate the students and their ideas.
Wow, those figures sound extremely impressive. And I was wondering if you can just expand on some of the key highlights or success stories that have come from BioBuilder.
I'd love to. Boy, we are so proud of our students. In fact, one of the students who was presenting at Pi Day learned that she had gotten into MIT on that very day while she was at MIT presenting her BioBuilder experiments, which was thrilling. We also are able to see students who develop project ideas in life science and present them to their local community because they are projects that impact their local community, or they are projects that are relevant to an illness that their family faces and those family members are in the room. So, those kinds of student impact where students have their lives, the science is relevant to their lives, and they are able to see themselves as scientists trying to solve a problem that matters to them and achieve things that matter to them. Is one of the measures of success that we have at BioBuilder. Another measure of success for us internally at BioBuilder is to think about students that thread our various programs together. So, a student that might come to us through a BioBuilder club might want to dive deeper into their project idea, and they can do that through our summer research program. Or a student who comes to us through our apprenticeship program and gets trained for a job might go for a job and then return to us as a tutor or as a ambassador for our programs. So as we see those students' activities thread together through BioBuilder, we see that as a huge success as well.
Wow. And how does BioBuilder tailor its curriculum to align with the needs of the biotech industry? And what roles does the industry partnership play in this process?
Gosh, I am so glad you asked that question because I think it is one of the distinguishing things that we do at BioBuilder. As I mentioned, the content came out of my teaching in the Department of Biological Engineering at MIT. So we're tightly aligned with academics, but we also are always working with industry and making sure that our content is training the students in the way that industry needs. One of our closest partners is Ginkgo Bioworks. We have a teaching space inside of their headquarters down in the Seaport in Boston, and we are developing additional teaching labs inside of biotech startup hubs, launch pads for biotech companies. And in that way, we stay really closely connected to industry. So, all the predictions are saying that in the next few years, industry is going to have a massive shortage of talented workers. And a lot of those jobs will not require a PhD. And so our hope hope is that by training the students now, in just a few years, they're going to be ready to step into those jobs that industry needs.
I think that's amazing information. I know a lot of times people tend to think that academia is the only route in order to, you know, get onto the career ladder in STEM, especially science. So knowing that that could actually sometimes be a barrier for some people. So it's good to know that that will be less considered as well in the future. So what do you see as the biggest challenges facing STEM education today? And how does BioBuilder address these challenges?
Gosh, you know, one thing that I see is that we keep education approaches, keep trying the same things and expecting different outcomes, right? Isn't that crazy, right? You keep doing the same thing and expect it to somehow be different. And so if I could change just one thing about the approach to education, it would be to reorient the way we educate students so that we can give them the tools to address problems that matter to them. And I think that that will initiate so many positive knock-on effects for education. I think it will keep students engaged. It will make their learning meaningful. It will reinvigorate teachers who love to see their students excited about this kind of work. So to me, I think it's really a mistake to keep doing the same thing and expect a different outcome. And with BioBuilder, we really try to provide teachers and students with those tools to address the challenges that matter to them.
Can you discuss any plans or initiatives BioBuilders has for expanding its reach and impact in the future?
Well, you bet. So we are very future focused. If you've heard anything from our conversation, it's probably that we really want to prepare the students for the future. And so one way we do that is to constantly revitalize our problem-based learning curriculum, our BioBuilder curriculum, so that it is solving meaningful problems with science. And then the other way we're doing this, and this is new to us this year, is to really focus on a skills training curriculum called Biotech Builder so that the students can be ready for those jobs of the future. I'm very excited about this complementary approach that we're taking at BioBuilder because our goal is to expand our reach. We really aim to be in every high school in America.
I think that you can definitely achieve that goal. It sounds like you guys are on a great projection. And what advice would you give to educators or organizations looking to enhance the STEM education opportunities for students?
That's also a really good question. You know, I think there are three things that are applicable to students, to teachers, to districts, to regions, that all sort of come together. The first thing is that it would benefit us all if we gave students opportunities to learn what it is to work in the field before they have to choose to pursue a field for the rest of their lives, right? It's a little bit crazy to ask a 14-year-old to decide what they're good at and what they will do for the rest of their lives, right? Without actually giving them an opportunity to try it out. So that would be the first thing, would be to really give students more opportunity to try on that lab coat, see if it's right for them. And if it's not right for them, try a different professional endeavor. The second thing that I think is really important is that we need to hold the bar very high. I think when we hold the bar high, we reach it. I think when we lower the bar, that is as far as we go. And so, you know, one thing we do at BioBuilder is to maintain very high standards for our work, our students, our educators. We hold ourselves to very high standards of professionalism. And I think in that way, we will reach greater heights because we are asking more. And then the third thing that I think is important for all of us to remember is that this is the century of biology. Biology is going to be the one that solves many of these serious challenges that chemistry has tried to address and physics has tried to address. This is the century for biology. And so to prioritize life science education, especially early and in a meaningful way for students, I think would benefit all of us.
I know I've asked you so many questions with regards to BioBuilder, and I feel like we've learned so much. But I was really curious about your own experience because this podcast is the Women in STEM podcast, and I love talking to women in science, and I wanted to know like what has been your experience in academia, and has there been any changes from how it used to be before and now?
Yes, a very strong yes to that. I would love for anybody listening to this podcast to know that you can plan and you can think you have a trajectory, and then something comes along and a door opens and you go through it because it suddenly seems like the right thing to do. So I was very fortunate in that I had an authentic scientific experience when I was a teenager. I was able to work at the National Institutes of Health as a summer job in Washington, D.C. And I saw, as I said, that science isn't about memorizing a lot of facts. It's really about problem solving. It's really about coming up with experiments to test things, working together. It was so much fun. I knew at that moment that I wanted to pursue science. And I don't know that I would have pursued science without that early experience in what it really means to do science. So from there, I went to study chemistry because that's a very good preparation for studying life science. I actually took a year off between college and graduate school to dance professionally in Boston for a year, but started graduate school in molecular biology at Harvard Medical School and did my postdoc there. But as a postdoc, realized that after I'd had my daughter, I no longer wanted to pursue bench research and running my own research lab. And I was really fortunate to land a teaching job at Wellesley College, where I was able to teach in the laboratory there to those young undergraduates and saw how the doing of science can really solidify the ideas of science. And I think that, my career really has been on that path of bringing real science to students so that they can see what it is like to be a scientist. From Wellesley, I moved to MIT when they were starting a new engineering major in biological engineering. I am not an engineer, but I loved the way it impacted my teaching to ask students to build something that mattered to them, made from biology, really initiated a whole new excitement and very lasting learning from those students. And so BioBuilder sprang out of my desire to have more teachers and students doing work this way. And if you had asked my 16-year-old self when I was at the NIH if I would be running a nonprofit organization that's in almost every state in the country, I would have shaken my head. I wouldn't even know how that could happen, right? But it's been a wonderful path. And I think being open to next opportunities and taking advantage of them, and relying on people who support you and mentor you, give you good advice has really been key to the really positive work we're doing in the world with BioBuilder.
Definitely. I think BioBuilder, it's such an amazing initiative, and I loved hearing your journey and how you ended up there and creating it. And I know you were mentioning about MIT and engineering. One of the reasons why I chose to call this the Women in STEM podcast is because there is so much overlap in STEM, and as you know, we progress with technology and the future, we'll be seeing more and more people having more of a fusion with regards to their career choices and decisions that they're going to be making. But I wanted to give you the opportunity to tell our listeners how they're going to be able to connect with you, how they can find BioBuilder. Would you be able to?
I'd be delighted to. A anyone who would be eager to bring BioBuilder into a school, into a district, into a region to help revitalize the bioeconomy, to help revitalize the economy there with biology. The best way to reach us is through the BioBuilder website, which is biobuilder.org. We are a nonprofit organization. There is a contact us page there, and we pay a lot of attention to every inquiry that comes in. So that is by far the best way to reach us. Our material is openly accessible and online. So if you're interested in just exploring what we do, we have lessons and textbook chapters that are freely downloadable. And if you have questions, please reach out.
Yep, so you guys have all heard it. You know exactly where to get in contact. And thank you so much for your time. Do you have any last words or any last things that you would like to add?
Maybe one. You had raised that question, tell us a little bit about how you got to where you are. I never imagined doing what I am currently doing. And I hope that that serves as inspiration to others. I think people should dare to believe that this next generation can solve these challenges that this world is facing and that they can work really hard to turn around and help the next in line. So, we're doing the work, and I hope others will as well.
Thank you once again for coming on the Women in STEM podcast. And I'll make sure to leave all your links in the bio down below. Thank you to the amazing guest host speaker. And thank you for listening to this episode. Please make sure to follow the podcast and to follow me on social media at Kelly_engineer on Twitter or Instagram. As well as please make sure to check out our new YouTube channel called Women in STEM Podcast to see our latest episodes visually. Until next time, bye!